just like Tesla.
What up, people of Earth? This is Brock Dittus from the Sprocket Podcast. This is where we are simplifying the good life. And Aaron, do you have that thing memorized? Because you don't have that cue card.
I don't have the cue card. But you know what?
Neglected.
We are coming to you live from Brock's apartment.
That's right.
Basement. How about that?
It's a basement apartment. Or is it an apartment with a basement? No one knows.
You just have to come over to Sprocket Studios and find out.
Yes, everyone, please come to my door now.
Live from the People's Republic of Portland.
Don't come to my door.
Only a day late from actual live. Nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
We are the show that brings you a somewhat irreverent and somewhat unorganized perspective. Conversations about the Anchor Tree. All right, I'm going to run back and do that again. We are the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way. Wasn't that professional?
That was awesome. You know what was more awesome than that? The things that we cover, which are day-to-day life.
Damn straight.
Food and alcohol. Bicycles and alternative transportation. Arts and culture. Communication. The internet. And... gosh, what would we call this? We would call today breaking records.
Breaking records like crazy.
Breaking records like...
destroying wax.
Someone famous who would break records.
Fat Boy Slim?
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. We had a great day today. There was this project called the Little Free Library Project, which is, I believe, a national trend.
Yes.
It's happening all over the world, over the country
at
least.
In fact, you can go to, Google search Little Free Libraries.
Little Free Libraries.
I'm not going to give you a mistaken URL.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea. We ended up participating in parts of that as some of them were being installed in our neighborhood. And the basic concept, of course, is that a Little Free Library is a little hutch. Is that fair to say? A little house for books.
Yeah.
That sits on a post outside your house.
It's like a large mailbox.
It's like a birdhouse for books.
There you go.
Yeah. And the idea being that you take books that you think are interesting and you like to share with your neighbors, and you put them in this little hutch, and then people come by and take them as they wish and return them when they're done. And so, we helped kind of install some of these. So there was a bicycle ride through our neighborhood.
Yeah, that was awesome. I don't know whose idea that was.
Yeah, and that's I think maybe the only time that I can think of, besides the Sunday parkways where they shut down the roads for people to bicycle in our neighborhood, otherwise known as Portland Cyclovia. It's the only time that there's ever been, I think, an organized bike ride of like a bunch of people in our neighborhood. It was pretty great because we're just far enough away to be maybe like not as close to organized bike rides.
Right.
And somebody said, hey, let's check out all the locations of these little free libraries.
I mean, you wouldn't think of where we live as like the cool parts of Portland. I think it's a cool neighborhood that we live in.
I think it's a cool neighborhood. Yeah, it is certainly not the premier neighborhood of Portland.
Right. I love it because it's not cool, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the hipsters haven't discovered it yet. Shh. We're the proto-hipsters. Oh, yeah. So anyways, it was a good time. And I got to ride my bike. One of the neighbors, one of the guys who had a little free library, he had this awesome cruiser bike. It was black with like flames painted onto it.
Oh, yeah. Did he have that custom built? I'd never asked him.
No, it's actually, I think it's a commercially built model, but it's really good looking and it's got red rims.
Oh, it's like flat black with like red trim on it.
Yeah. He let me ride it. It was very comfortable. Oh. Very comfortable indeed. So it's not the sort of bike I would ride on a long road trip, but I would certainly ride it around town and feel good about it.
Yeah. If I were of the kind that would own multiple bikes for specialized uses, that would be a cruiser bike.
Definitely. Definitely. Hey, you got a soda over there.
I do.
You want an opener?
I should open that one.
All right, there you go.
What are you drinking today?
I'm drinking a borrowed shot of, this is Seagram 7, I believe. Mr. Rhodes, former host and my housemate upstairs said, hey, if you're going to borrow a shot and you're going to pay me back with the cheap swill that you buy, you should take from the Seagram's bottle. So I am doing that. And, cheers.
There you go.
You've got a real cola?
I have Virgil's real cola.
Virgil's makes a good product.
Yeah.
I remember their root beer is some of the best. And it's natural ingredients, I believe?
Yes.
More or less.
All natural. Let me just do a quick... yeah, all natural. What I like about this, you have things like clove, nutmeg, cinnamon in here. various things like spices like that. And they list them as such, as opposed to caramel color, corn syrup.
Right. Those are no fun.
Flavor number 5.
Yeah. And we have between us, I think, the ingredients of a Jack and Coke, essentially.
Hey.
But they won't be mixed. You'll be having yours and I'll be having mine. So,
all right.
Yeah. I am just having the Jack. Here it is.
Cheers.
That's Seagram's. Mm. Mm. It's a wicked whiskey. That's what I got to say. Well, what are we talking about? We got a bunch of stuff to go over today.
Sure.
We were going to, that's right. We were talking about the
little free libraries.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. We got sidetracked.
Anything else on that?
Cruiser. Just how cool it was that, you know, again, we're not known anyways as like the cool neighborhoods, you know, but all of us kind of got together and we realized, hey, we're kind of all friendly with each other. I wouldn't necessarily call some of them up for bowling. I might call a few of them up for bowling.
Yeah, you'd choose bowling alone over bowling with them. Yeah.
No, I wouldn't choose bowling alone, but like anyhow.
But you're not bowling buddies yet.
Not yet.
Yeah, someday, maybe.
But there's a couple people that I met today that I would say like, hey, let's go bowling.
Why not? fuck it. Let's go bowling.
Fuck it, dude.
Yeah, exactly.
But seriously, it was really cool to just get to know people that I've seen around a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's the couple that live in that wacky house on the corner of 84th and Flavelle, you know.
Oh, they're like the urban farmers.
Right, with the ducks in the greenhouse there.
Known for their chickens and whatnot.
Right. And they were really cool. I actually got to set the post for them.
Yeah.
And hang out with them for a time.
Putting concrete in the ground?
Yeah.
How's your concrete mixing skills?
Not too bad.
We've done a lot of that.
Well, you discovered some for yourself. Like, you've seen me mix concrete.
Mm-hmm. We built some fence pieces here at the house as well. You were here for that. It was just a big construction weekend, more or less.
It kind of was. Yeah. Well, you know, it was the weekend for it. It's been rainy all week.
Yeah.
And it paused a bit. It rained a little bit on Saturday, but
the sun popped out, and it was really nice.
From time to time. Yeah. And then today,
good day for mixing crete.
All right, that was another thing I observed today. There was people at the park.
Yeah,
spring has sprung.
Yeah.
People are going to the park again.
It's finally safe to come out of your hovel.
I'm
looking forward to that. I'm actually thinking I would like to go camping soon because last year I waited until Memorial Day to actually go out and camp outside. And I would like to do it sooner than that this year. So we shall see.
Awesome.
Well, hey, we got a big sack. Big sack of mail. Is that right? let me get you a sound effect for that.
Yes. Yes. Let me open up this mailbag here.
Okay. Hang on. Oh, it's so close. It's not. I don't have a sound effect. But if I did, it would say, "You've got mail."
There you go.
How was that?
Zed writes, "I happened upon one of your stickers at VeloCult. Yeah, britches.
That's right.
And have been taken into your two-wheeled spoken revolutions of pedaling pleasures. I'm all about simplifying the good life on bicycle. I'm a part of a show that is live every Wednesday at VeloCult, known as Open Bike, put on by PDXK's Crank My Chain. We've been running the show since January and are hoping to get more bicycle culture from around the globe to make an appearance on the show." Sweet. Here's a story from the show. We'll link that up from bikeportland.org and one of our favorite shows for Open Bike.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Crank My Chain is Dan Kaufman's project. Dan, of course, is the guy. He's the guy with the disco trike that was appropriated during Occupy Portland by the police, largely for symbolic reasons, I've heard.
Oh, yeah.
Although that's up for debate. He's been doing this thing at VeloCult since they've opened the space to him. Every night you've got, instead of an open mic, it's an open bike. And actually there was a fantastic discourse from Michael Anderson from Portland Afoot. He talked about the etymology of open mic and whether or not you're supposed to spell it open M-I-C for microphone or open M-I-K-E. I don't know. Apparently open mic, M-I-K-E, is... apparently, it's the preferred spelling for some reason. No one does that, obviously. I've never seen that on a sign, but apparently that, if you were tracing it down.
Well, if you break it down like in standard phonetic English, you know, the one MIC,
right,
you would read it as open mic.
Open mic, yeah.
You know, if you didn't have the cultural context.
Right. Or open Mitch, perhaps, if you, I don't know if you're European or something. So, yeah, anyways, open bike. I was, it reminded me of Michael's whole thing. It was a Twitter thing.
Okay.
But, yeah, it's been a big event. It's happening every week. And so, yeah, there's always some musicians on hand. They're always doing some sort of musical thing. And then there's always someone saying something. The show that Zed here sent on to us, I believe that had Emily Finch writing a, she had written a piece and she read it, orated it, not necessarily about bicycling, as she's known as the lady who, what, she carries all six of her children around by bicycle on Bach beats. And
yeah.
So she wrote about Catholicism and birth control and the experience of that.
Nice.
Yeah. She's not shy. She's great. You know, she's doing a good thing there. So we got to get her on the show someday. But until then, you can watch the episode there. And I don't know what time point that it was, like halfway through the video or something. But yeah.
Great.
And yeah, I think that's it. So next little bit then.
Next little bit, Dan, former guest, gave us a generous donation just to keep us rolling. This would be Dan Christensen.
Dan Christensen, yeah,
from,
definitely.
Roll Easy Blog.
Mm-hmm, yeah. So we got to, I was trying to figure out if it would be appropriate to say that that's overtime money and he's sending it on to us. I don't know if that's appropriate. I'm not going to make a comment about that. I decided not to say that on the show. but
right.
Dan, thank you so much. We really appreciate that. I know he was off of work for a couple of weeks. He wasn't driving, and he's finally back to it.
Good.
Welcome back to full health, Dan, we hope. And
and he was talking about dieting.
Yeah.
On his blog, mm-hmm. And he's reached his goal already. That's short of the time that he had planned.
That's badass. But Dan, then again, Dan seems like a guy who sets his mind to something and does it.
And does it, yeah.
I believe Dan could do just about whatever he wants to do. So, yeah, except make the management happy.
Well, no one can do that.
That's right. So thanks, Dan. Much appreciated.
David Hetty, our friend, mentions the new bicycle travel publication, Bunyan Velo.
Bunyan Velo.
Thumb through.
Yeah.
I never read an article, but
did you thumb through it electronically on your iPod?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So that I use my thumb.
I believe it's an electronic publication. I don't think they go to print. They might. But,
oh, really?
But at least
it's laid out almost as if it were print.
Hmm. Yeah.
But maybe that's part of the shtick or whatever.
Could be. I don't know enough about them to say, actually. Other than it seems like a pretty cool deal. And, you know, anything that's...
Didn't read a single article, but I loved the photography in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyone that's telling stories about bicycle travel, there's always room at the table. So we like that.
And Dan, a different Dan.
This is Dan in Minnesota, I believe.
In Minnesota. This is the drunken email Dan.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't typify him as that. He lives in a tiny house and he works on bikes.
Is this the guy that emailed us and said, hey, I'm drunk?
He has, in fact, drunk texted us before. I don't know if he's actually drunk.
Okay.
He's drinking.
True. Yeah, I think he didn't really say I'm drunk. He said, like, I've had, like, five beers.
Exactly.
Anyways, he texts us a burp.
Yep. Yeah. So thanks, Dan.
Johnny K asks us how to get your significant other to the bike shop with you when they're really not that into it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this was actually a fascinating comment that he left. I'll read just maybe a couple pieces.
Yeah.
Of
it was a nice little, dissertation or whatever. About sort of the tensions of what do you do when you're so into bikes, but your significant other really isn't. And how do you get her into it without like seeming like a pushy male?
Exactly. Yeah, definitely. And that's, maybe you summarized it just as well as you could have. Basically, I guess she's been having back problems, and so bicycling is already kind of uncomfortable for her. There's a couple of different reasons. He was talking about there's the infrastructure, the lack of infrastructure where they live. It's not that great to ride out there, and her, you know, her back issues and all that. So what he says is, I guess I'm just lonely riding by myself, and going on rides without her is not as enjoyable as I thought they would be. Ladies, how do I convince her to come ride with me? He wants us to do a segment maybe on husband-wife cyclists. What's the most appropriate ways to get your spouse to join? She sees cycling as a chore, like mowing the yard or cleaning the house instead of just plain childlike fun, like I see it. So, and the one thing that he mentioned was, I thought was very interesting, was the idea that if you yourself love bicycles, but you can't do that with your partner, that does kind of present an issue, because the time invested takes you away from your partner. And unless you really hate each other and you're kind of like, you know, I don't know, if you're in a bad relationship or something, it's you want to be together. And so sure. How do you do that?
Yeah.
Do you have any thoughts?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I find that hard for myself, like, because I like to bike and is actually, in some part, my special lady friend got me into biking.
Mm-hmm.
And now she doesn't bike so much.
Right.
And
we kind of blew out her knees because we took her on a ride.
Yeah.
That was a little bit bigger. We had to talk to her about that.
Damn you guys. Why did you do that to her? She won't ride with me.
I do kind of feel bad about that, actually.
Really?
I feel like maybe we should talk. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I'll let you guys sort that one out.
Okay.
I don't think you guys are solely to blame.
Okay.
But yeah. And so she doesn't bike quite as much. And so it is kind of tough for her to get on like longer rides. And I do feel like I have to do a bit of prodding from time to time. And yet I hate feeling like that pushy boyfriend.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
But I enjoy spending time with her.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there is that kind of weird tension of, like, I want to just kind of go on a really long ride. And it's a nice day. And she may not. But I also want to spend time with her, and like, what do you do?
Right.
I think our friend, I don't think he'll mind me saying, our friend David Hetty, he like goes on solo rides.
Oh
a
yeah.
Lot,
he's a badass.
Away from wife and kids.
Yeah. Was the placeholder, or what do you call placeholder? He won races at the last cyclocross events he was at.
He came first in his division,
yeah,
I believe.
Yeah. Yeah. And he does a lot of training to get there. So yeah, he's, you know, congratulations.
Yeah. And that's what he enjoys. Hannah likes bikes. Hannah likes to ride too.
Right.
But she also, you know, realizes like someone's got to watch the kids.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And they don't, the kids like to go in the trailer occasionally, but not every time, you know, and he also needs to do a lot of training.
There's a big difference between training rides and rides out with the family too.
Right. Like
they're just of a different nature.
Right. Right. Both I think are fun, you know, if you're of that nature.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can't like do the training ride with the wife and kids if, you know, it's just not going to line up that way. So I think you need like some sort of understanding, so to speak, like, hey, I'm going to have time away from you. You're going to have time away from me. And that doesn't mean I dislike you or we don't have a good relationship. However, that said, I'm not sure I could do that myself, like to be able to go like, hey, I'm spending like a lot of my time with you, a lot of my daily life with you, but I want to go ride my bike, so I'm taking off right now.
Yeah, peace. You know? See you later.
Peace out.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm sure there's some balance to be had.
I don't know that we have the answers, and I feel like I kind of lucked into something great because like Adele and I got into bikes about the same time, and we kind of our relationship started kind of with that as a big piece of it. So,
damn you guys, you set the bar too damn high for me.
I am sorry about that. Just trying to figure out the what do you do? I really don't know, and so we're certainly open to input. If other people have thoughts on the topic, please send us an email.
Husbands, wives, boyfriends, girlfriends.
Yeah, Twitter to us. I'd be especially interested in something like the opposite idea, like if there's a lady out there that can't get her guy friend to ride with her, I'd be curious about that. So yeah. Well, it's the sprocketpodcast@gmail.com is our email address. It's at sprocketpodcast on Twitter and
or, hell call us.
That's right.
503-847-9774.
Yeah. So, hey, one more thing.
Jeremy leaves us a voicemail.
So we'll play that here. Yeah. Sweet. Yeah.
Hey, Brock and Aaron and listeners to this Sprocket podcast. This is Jeremy from the Critical Transit podcast. You've heard me before in Boston. And I wanted to call in and let you know that I have ditched my cell phone plan. So thank you, Brock, for the encouragement on that. And I am using pretty much just Wi-Fi. You can get Wi-Fi pretty much everywhere. And I'm doing everything that I need to do on Wi-Fi. And I do have an emergency plan, what I consider an emergency plan, from a company called Ting, where I pay about $15 a month, and I get a handful of minutes and messages and megabytes of internet. And I use that for emergencies, like last night when I got locked out of my pedicab garage here in Chicago, and it was about 10 degrees, and I had been out for about 4 hours on the street. I just want to say that I'm in Chicago, and I am touring the city. I'm on tour of transit systems and bike networks and other sustainable transportation around the country. And I posted all that on my website. And basically, yeah, I'm just having a good time in Chicago. I'm exploring the elevated rail system, which is very unique and continues to fascinate me. And, you know, being from the East Coast, I appreciate a lot of the culture here, and the pace of life suits me quite well. So that's exciting. Next week, I'll be leaving and heading up north to Wisconsin and Minnesota, and then onward from there. And I hope to be in Portland in fall. So that's exciting. You can check out me at criticaltransit.com. And thanks again for the great show, and keep up the great work. And I will talk to you soon.
Thanks, Jeremy. Much appreciated.
Yeah,
that was, it's nice to get phone calls every now and again, you know, actual phone calls to the voicemail. Because, it's just, we don't talk on the phone that much as a culture anymore.
No.
It's all about texts and things. So it's nice to hear people's voices every now and again.
It's nice to put a voice to the name. And big ups on you for biking in Chicago.
Yeah, and driving right a pedicab, no less.
No kidding.
I believe there was some sports and some balls and stuff, and he was driving people around after a game. The most recent episodes of Critical Transit are available at criticaltransit.com, and he talks with another guy about the pedicab experience in Chicago. So that's some interesting stuff to listen to if you like that. And the tour that he's doing, it's all by sustainable transit, more or less. He's trying to do as much local bus service as possible. And he and I would, I don't know that I've ever met another person aside maybe from Chris Smith who likes to talk about transit stuff as much as he does. So, you know, just meeting a kindred soul every now and again is great. So,
and he'll be in Portland in the fall.
Yeah. I hope he makes it. We should probably roll on to this interview with Adam Fisher.
Hit it.
And for everyone's context, I'll play this now. This is some of the music that he had passed on as a project that he's kind of been involved with. It's an album of music based on transit systems.
Okay.
And he kind of helped put this compilation together. It's a bunch of people. This track that we're listening to now is, let me find the artist's name. This is by Ben Faze. The album is 1,000 Stations, 1,000 Stations, the Metro EP. And this song is called Keep Moving. Adam contacted me and said, hey, I would like to talk about my attempts at breaking transit records. So he'll kind of detail what that's about. I was really glad to talk to him. It was kind of interesting. We had a bit of trouble with the connection trying to
make. I was asking you about this, and then I interrupted you and said, wait. Wait for the show.
Yeah, no.
Tell me about it now.
It was just trying to get Skype to work and make our connection. So I feel like I was a little bit frazzled, and I'm not sure like if I was on my A game as far as putting the interview together and asking really good questions or not. But we had an interesting discussion. He had a lot of cool things to say. So we will roll that interview now, and then we'll be back with a couple of headlines and some stuff to wrap up at the end.
Right on.
Are we there?
I believe so, yes.
Fantastic. Well done, sir. That's the problem with technology. It's like it has such promise, and yet sometimes it delivers so little.
Yes.
Well, it sounds like the delay is gone, and you and I are almost, it's almost like we're in the same room.
Okay.
Thank you again for making the time. And you're Adam Fisher. You are a world record Guinness attempt person. Do you hold a record currently?
Unfortunately not.
Okay, but you've been trying.
Yes.
Yeah, so tell me about this. How does this challenge work?
Well, the idea is to take the least amount of time, or the shortest time, to visit every station on either the London Underground or the New York subway, arriving at and or departing from each station on a train. That's essentially it.
Okay.
And
it's New York and the Tube are the only two that count?
For Guinness, yes. But after 14 attempts on the Tube, I thought, well, I can just apply the rules anywhere else. I don't really care if Guinness don't recognize them. So I've been to several other cities to do the same thing.
Okay, yeah, and you mentioned you've been to Barcelona, Toronto, and Chicago. And in Chicago, how many times have you done it there?
Ooh, 3 times now.
Okay, and that was enough for them to name an L stop after you.
No, that's incorrect. They didn't name an L stop after me. They custom made a sign in CTA livery with my name on it and sent it to me.
Oh, I see.
As a little commemoration of the fact that I'd gone all the way there from England pretty much just to ride their entire train system. So that was nice. Although I did tell several friends that I had a station named after me, and when they started to believe me, I said, "No, actually, I haven't."
Right, unless the train goes all the way to England and has a stop in your room.
Yes, that'd be good. I'll ask the CTA about that, actually. Have you ever, well, you know, you're considering the Red Line extension at the moment. Well, you could extend it to England. How about that?
Just, yeah, keep on pushing until you get there. So tell me, just as far as transit is concerned, is this a relatively new pursuit for you, or have you liked transit for a long time?
The first time I tried it was 9 years ago.
The first time you tried to break the record?
Yes.
Okay.
But I've always been a fan of public transport, yes.
Where did it start?
Well, one day I wondered if it were possible to go to every single tube station in one day, and then I started researching, discovered there was a Guinness World Record for it, and it went on from there.
And as you were attempting, I assume there has to be some planning involved. Like you need to sit down, look at timetables, see where trains go, where buses go, that sort of thing.
That's right.
So a lot of math, or at least practical applied mathematics.
Yes.
So as far as the challenge is concerned, this is the goal is to visit every. I keep wanting to call it T stops because I've spent a lot of time on subways in Boston, but tube stops. There are stations. How many stations are there in London?
270.
That's quite a bit.
Yes.
Yeah. So, go ahead.
The current record is just under 16 and a half hours currently.
Okay. And so that's
in one go.
Right. I assume that means that you're not spending a whole lot of time at these stations once you get to them.
No.
Because there are more to visit.
Well, yes, the question I'm asked most frequently is, do you have to get off and get on at each station? And the answer is no, because if one did that, it would probably take about 2 or 3 days. There's no need to alight the train unless you're changing lines. So for the most part, you just you're just on a train that stops in the station, but effectively just passes through.
I see. So in that case, you don't need to. Well, I'm trying to think of how this works. You need to put your feet on the concrete at each station, then?
No, not at all.
Okay, so you just need to pass through each station.
Yes.
Okay, and that cuts down considerably, because I was thinking above 200 stations, that'd be an awful lot of getting on and off of trains, but that does simplify the challenge some. So, all right. What do you see as some of your biggest challenges? Obviously, you're working against the clock. What else gets in the way as you're trying to break this record?
The main thing is whether the system runs as it should, because if it does, then technically, the route should work. If it doesn't, then obviously it doesn't. And there's a bit of a human element as well, to be honest, because if you miss a train, then obviously the whole schedule can be thrown out of kilter. So you have it is down to the individual to some extent to make sure that they make the connections and things like that, and can possibly reroute if a problem's run into.
Yeah, the transfer is the biggest problem that many transit users face, and I've had that many times where either I have very little time and I just barely make the connection, or I could have done the trip quicker, you know, if I had just hurried just a bit faster, or if the bus itself had been driving just a bit faster. I make a commute that's about an hour and 15 minutes if I do it the whole way from home to work, and every now and again it could be like a 55-minute commute, but you know, it's missing that transfer that kind of makes or breaks that proposition. So yeah, what else do you face as far as there's a human element, you say? Do people ever get in the way?
Oh yes, and therefore it helps if when you arrive at a transfer point you are at a point in the train where you are closest to the exit. Because if the exit is at one end of the platform and you're at the other end of the train and it's rush hour, the train stops, 1,000 other people alight and are heading for the exit, then that doesn't work, basically.
Definitely, yeah. It's a big crowd. Yeah. So that it seems like you'd have to know the stations pretty well. Like if there is a single exit that you have to get to and you have to know which end of the train to be on, would you say you have an encyclopedic or photographic knowledge of the stations?
No, not at all.
Okay.
when I research, I actually write things down and then refer to them later. So I wouldn't say I have a very good memory for this sort of thing, but I don't know. I think maybe if I walk through something two or three times, I can have the hang of it. But I am quite meticulous in research, so I tend to just write everything down, and then I walk and try to explore all other possible options. So it can take a bit of time. When I was in New York, actually, I had a guidebook and a list of things I wanted to do. I think I only ended up doing about one of them because I just spent all my time on the subway.
Most of your time, just kind of planning things out, yeah.
Yes, because I didn't realize how – well, obviously I knew it was big, but I didn't realize exactly how big it was until I actually arrived personally, subway planning takes over my life.
Certainly, yeah, I could see how that would be the case. I mean, obviously, there's so many moving parts just to run a transit agency, but then to add the element of a world record that's got to be broken, that's certainly a complicating factor. So, would you say it's kind of like being a touring musician? Like you get to play a concert in cities all over the world, but you'd never go out to eat anywhere.
I never thought of it like that, but one could say that, yes.
There's kind of an analog there. You're a rock star of the transiting world. So
it's funny you should say that because I have actually released an album about transit systems.
Right,
around the
you
world.
Had emailed me when yes. You emailed me. You mentioned that you had this project. Tell me a little bit about this. What does that entail?
Well, it's a compilation album featuring me and a lot of other people from around the world, and it's called Metro EP under the name 1000 Stations.
Okay.
And it consists of a few songs about different transport systems around the world, from Buenos Aires to Moscow. And when I was preparing for the Paris Metro run, I wrote a song about the Metro, which named all the stations in alphabetical order. And then I thought, well, maybe I can expand this idea. So I contacted a lot of people in different countries that I knew and asked if they'd like to submit a song about their respective metro systems, which was quite nice. So yes, we ended up with a few songs, and then it was released last summer.
Fantastic. That's a great project, and especially there's this certain niche, and it's hard to find, I think, sometimes, unless you know who and what you're looking for. But there's these little pockets of transit aficionados all over the world, and there's amazing creative projects like that. There was one that I was turned on to here in town in Portland, Oregon. There is trying to remember. Well, there's been a few, actually. There's a little publication that's focused on low-car life, and they spent some time just kind of rounding up songs about transit, bikes, and walking. And one of them was a vintage sort of cut from around 2004 when a nonprofit collaborated with our transit agency, TriMet, to produce a hip-hop single. It wasn't very good, but it does exist, so... from what I've heard, I was just on the internet before we connected. I was listening to a couple audio samples. It sounds like it would be good running music.
Maybe you could link me to it. I'd like to hear it now.
Yeah, I mean, the project that you have worked on, I'm sorry, I should have been more specific.
Oh, right.
The one that you produced sounds like it's kind of electronic. It's got a beat to it. It sounds like it would be good motivational music as you're trying to dash from station to station.
I wouldn't say that because it's quite languid. It isn't really dance music.
Oh, okay.
It's more melancholic music, okay. I think.
Yeah.
But I would say it would be a good soundtrack to listen to on one's commute, but perhaps not to run to. But then again, people run to all sorts of things, so it could very well work. I don't know. But I think it would need to be a bit faster for running, but that's just me.
It sounds like a remix project is in the works then.
Absolutely. But can you send me the link for this hip hop single? Because
I'd love certainly. To. Yeah. It's, I believe it's on YouTube. There's another one that's, it's actually, as you say, kind of a language cut as well, but it's, about a specific, light rail and bus terminal in the Western Portland area. It's called Beaverton Transit Center, and there was a song written about that as well. So, yeah, I'll totally send you some of those. So, as far as you grew up in England, I assume?
Yes.
Okay, so transit is much more a part of the culture there. It seems like I've only been there once. That was last February. But it seems like it's more imbued into the fabric of life. Like people don't balk at taking a bus or taking a train like they might here in the States. Would you say that's an accurate assessment?
Perhaps. I'm not too familiar with the general American perception of public transport, to be honest. I mean, do people bulk at taking buses or trains normally?
I think certain people do. There's a convenience in the big cities where if you work in an office downtown, I think it's very convenient to take public transit because it's faster than trying to find a parking space for your car. But in most of the rest of the country, either transit doesn't exist or it has a stigma of like, this is for poor people or this is for people, you know, who can't afford to get their own car or something like that. So instead of being integral to the transit network, it's more of a supplementary sort of thing. So I think the average American could be summed up by a picture, you know, of someone sitting in their car in rush hour traffic eating junk food out of a bag.
Very well. That isn't how I see America, but fair enough.
I'm glad. That's good. Okay, so it's not as bad as it seems to me sometimes. Yeah, it's just different pockets. Yeah, and I think especially if you've been visiting, doing the city life. I think city life is probably a bit different than suburban life. Yeah, I'm fascinated by the disjunction and how it's. I think transit overall is a great idea, but it's almost like some people are too proud to take advantage of the system. So anyways, I feel like it's easier. And in my limited world travel, it seems like in other parts of the world, transit is more accessible and it carries less of that stigma.
Well, I don't believe that anyone has a problem taking public transport here by any means. Of course, London is the prime example. It has the largest subway system, in the in the British Isles and in Europe as well, of course, in terms of sort of route miles. The Paris Metro has more stations, but it's a lot denser. People have no problem taking it here, although in most cases people only use public transport because they have to, really. I suspect that many people would rather drive or something like that, and many people complain about buses and trains here as well, as I'm sure they do in America too. And of course, when I speak to people about spending over 16 hours on the tube, obviously they wonder why we'd want to spend 1 second longer on it than is necessary.
right.
In Paris, there's pretty much a vendetta against the metro and RER because there are entire websites dedicated to how bad the system is. Having gone on it myself, I don't really have anything bad to say about it.
Sure.
Although I never did it in rush hour, so I don't really know. But generally, I would say that perhaps a majority of people would. If they could avoid public transport, they probably would. It's the things about being able to have a seat, not being able to do what you want to do, perhaps having someone either staring at you the entire journey or looking over your shoulder, and of course being pressed up against many other people in rush hour. So obviously it isn't most people's cup of tea. I don't actually mind that, but that's just me.
Exactly. I was just going to say, as far as record breaking is concerned, you've been to many different cities. You've done quite a few different things. What is next on the horizon for you? Do you have another attempt on the tube or in New York or some other city?
Oh, definitely the tube. And I'd like to go to another city, but it just depends, really. There's no one in particular, although I do have my eye on Valencia.
Okay.
Because there the metro actually encompasses metro, light rail, and tram. It's all under the metro banner, and I assume that it's that you have free connections between each one. So that'd be useful. Okay. Because normally what has to be determined before one does this thing is what actually constitutes the metro. Now the London Underground has 270 stations. Now there's also a light rail called the Docklands Light Railway, and that complements the tube, but it isn't run by the tube, so therefore it doesn't count.
Okay.
Towards the record. So there are things like that that I need to determine before I actually go out and attempt it.
Right, and just making sure that you know, of course, what the goal is and which stations you need to be at, just to avoid an embarrassing situation where you thought you had finished and then you had not.
Yes.
Yeah, and you say Valencia, it's the subway, the tram, or is it like a streetcar kind of thing, just a surface rail, and then buses?
Yes, I've never been to Valencia, but I was looking at it online recently, and it looks like it's a composite system made up of lots of different bits and pieces and networks. So it could be very, very interesting. As a matter of fact, I could go to every station on the tram, then on the metro, then on the light rail, perhaps, and then finish off with a sweep of all three.
Right. Yeah. So that would be a fairly easy tour, I suppose, compared to some others.
Yes, I might contact the Valencia transport operator and ask exactly what their criteria are.
There we go. Yeah, yeah. So I'm curious. Obviously, this is a thing. There's enough people doing this for there to be a record, and so you must have bumped into a couple people that share your passion for trying to break this record.
Absolutely, there is an entire online forum dedicated to the pursuit of the tube record.
I kind of think of it as, you know, like you're all going out to for drinks somewhere at a bar or something like that. But I assume
we do that as well.
Okay,
to be honest, every year there's an annual race around the Central London stations only, and then we just go and drink and play darts afterwards.
Perfect.
And there are a few other such meetings as well throughout the year. So it's a social thing,
right? And so a lot of trick swapping and saying this is what worked for me and what didn't work for me, and this is something we need to know and that sort of thing.
No, actually.
No. Okay, you're keeping your tricks
only
to yourself.
Only for alternative challenges. So the race around the Central London stations only. Everyone reveals their route then, but no record hopeful will give his or her route away. So if it's for the full thing, then no one knows what anyone else is thinking.
And that's just good common sense if you want to be the first to get to it.
Precisely.
Yeah. As far as obviously the secrets are closely held. Is there a certain camaraderie between people that are attempting these things in similar ways, similar times, or is it more competitive and less cordial?
It's both. It's competitive and it's friendly, to be honest. Very often people. Record hopefuls will go and help other record hopefuls by acting as support, dropping off food and things like that on an attempt that really has nothing to do with them. So there is some camaraderie, certainly.
Okay, that's good. I'm curious, as far as tools are concerned, obviously, you know, smartphones are a thing now. More people have them than ever before, and it's easier and easier to access data on the fly or en route to somewhere. What kinds of things do you use both for planning and for when you're trying to break one of these records yourself?
Well, planning is just maps, really. Mostly for me, and yes. Smartphones can be invaluable with the different apps you can receive for live travel information and things like that. Despite being one of the so-called download generation, I'm not really into smartphones and things like that. I have used them, but I'm hardly a world authority on them. So that isn't really my area. But yes, the possibilities of accessing data on the fly, as you say, compared to 10 years ago when such a thing wouldn't have been possible, really, is unbelievable. Technology has come along and transit operators and app developers obviously recognize that, and they develop programs to help the general public, but I don't think they know that they are in fact doing a great service to help people such as myself. I've met a couple of app developers actually, and told them about what I do, and they were quite fascinated by it. So that was nice.
Very good. Yeah, but you prefer the paper maps, you say. You actually would rather look at the data on something that's physical, something you can touch and have in your hand.
Yes. For the same reason, I still buy CDs and vinyl records rather than downloading music.
Right. Yeah. I'm a vinyl man myself whenever possible. It's just nice to have something, you know, like if you're going to, especially if you're going to pay money for something, you might as well have a thing as opposed to an idea.
A digital song is a file. I mean, it's just a file. You can't see who wrote the song. You can't read the lyrics. You can't say produce that so and so studios or whatever. Anyway, I digress. But that. I'm not very much into that, to be honest.
For sure, yeah. Do they have print schedules for the tube, or is it so frequent that you really don't need a schedule?
Yes, that's right. It's the same in Paris as well. They just say, "The metro is frequent enough. Yeah, we can't be bothered to give out timetables and whatever."
Yeah, and I think they've just moved to that with our system here in Portland. It's not that we don't need schedules because the buses aren't that frequent, nor are the trains, but there are other options, and actually view screens for arrival estimation and that sort of thing. Those things have been added just in the past few years, and it does cut down on the amount of printing that needs to be done. As far as I'm trying to think of other things that that you'd be particularly an authority on, different forms and different styles of trains. Obviously, in different places, they use different vehicles. There are many different companies that build trains. Are there certain vehicles that you prefer over others?
Not really. I don't really care what sort of vehicle operates on a metro, as long as it runs properly, to be honest. But in the last 2 or 3 years, what I call walk-through trains have been introduced, and they're quite good because obviously if you're at the wrong end of a train, you can just walk straight through it.
As opposed to a train where all the compartments are separate and you might be stuck on one end of the train and not be able to travel to the other end.
Yes.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, especially for your purposes. If you have that functionality, that's very useful indeed. You said there's Valencia. You're looking at that. Are there other cities that you have not yet visited that you would like to?
Oh, too many to mention, really.
Okay, yeah.
Just wherever and whenever I have the opportunity. It's very nice to go to a different place. I always like to go to different places. A city to which I've never been before, really. And really, that isn't always possible. Obviously, New York was last year. And then I went to Milan last year as well. And that was good. But I do like to go to cities and countries to which I've never been before. That's a good part of the pursuit as well.
Definitely, yeah. Just in search of adventure and in search of new experiences. That's something I can resonate with. I love seeing new places. Is there something in all of this hustle and bustle? Obviously, I assume you must be in pretty good shape to be able to do all the running that it requires to get from train to bus to et cetera. Are there other things that you have taken away from these experiences that you think have improved your life elsewhere?
Ooh, okay. that have improved my life elsewhere. No.
That's all right. It was kind of I figured I'd drop a deep one and see what would happen. Well, that's
apart from being able to help people who need pointing in the right direction on the tube or something like that,
which in itself is actually a nice thing to be able to. I mean, if you can make someone's day better by saying, "No, it's not this train; it's the other," that in itself is not that's not to be trifled with. That's a good thing.
But I was doing that years ago anyway. I think the strange thing is when I go to foreign cities and people come up to me there asking for transit directions, and I think, well, I don't live here, but fine, just go that way. Of course, I'm just looking at the map, really. It's quite amusing when people who actually live in that city ask me as well, because I think I know your city better than you, and I've only been here
right
48 hours.
Well, some people are not map people, that's for sure.
Well, I'd like to think that I've gleaned things from this pursuit that have enriched my other areas of life, but I really can't think of one at the moment.
Well, I would imagine the entire experience, just the fact that you're active and you're running places, you're doing things quickly, and all the time, through the entire experience, your brain is active because you're thinking about the specifics of like where you need to be next and the things you need to do. I feel like that's got to be good for you, at least as good as Sudoku or a crossword puzzle or something in the morning, you know?
Yes, I'm not. Sudoku and crosswords really aren't my thing.
They're not mine either. I've been told that they're good for your brain. I actually sit down.
They are, undoubtedly.
Oh, yeah. I cobble together transit schedules as a form of that myself. So, yeah. Well, I probably better go. I got to get back to work. But thank you, Adam, so much for taking the time to talk. And is there places on the internet people can find you? I've got some links to video appearances. Do you have your own website?
No, I'm working on that.
All right.
But I'll send you the links. Also, if you wanted to play one of the Metro songs on the podcast, you could do that as well.
I would love to. I will find that. It's available on iTunes and anywhere else.
I think it's just iTunes. A few of the songs are on Spotify, but I don't think all of them are. So it's a bit confusing.
Oh, sure.
But yeah, the whole thing's on iTunes.
Very
yes.
good. Well, I will. I'll put that up. Put a link to that up on our site as well. Adam okay. Fisher, thank you very much, and good luck on your next race.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, so that was the part where, like, Juno figures out how to, like, repeat the same overhang bridge.
Leonardo DiCaprio is telling her how. Yeah, it's yeah. Inception music, right?
Now that you say it's based on like transit or whatever, like it's totally understandable that I get that impression, like of people milling about.
Right.
I mean, I guess there's recordings of people milling about, but
yeah. And this album actually has a lot of like crowd noise and stuff that's okay. recorded from transit areas, which is kind of cool. So yeah, that was our interview with Adam Fisher. And again, we wish Adam the best of luck in his transit record setting attempts. And I believe Valencia, he was saying, is one of the places he wants to go and check out next and probably scope out for another day of riding trains.
Cool.
I was thinking it'd be kind of fun to do that here in Portland and just see like how little time it would take me to get to every light rail station in the Portland system.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So we shall see. Maybe I'll try. I'm not committing to it, though.
No.
Let's see. Well, hey, we've got some headlines, so maybe we should do some of that. Let me get you the headline sounder. Oh, the opener. There it is. Local Portland band Herbird.
What can compare with the thrill of a brand new bike?
I like my bike, it's fast. I like my bike, it's fast. I like my bike, it's fast. It circles around the city lights.
Pedal just as fast as we can into the morning light. Pedal just as fast as we can into the daylight. Pedal just as fast as we can into the night.
Sweet. So from Brandon, the Atlantic Cities, Austin develops bike maps based on rider comfort level, which is cool.
Yeah.
So you have these maps that say like, hey, if you're not so cool with traffic, try these routes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you don't mind being around traffic.
Yeah.
These
and
roads are cool.
I'm trying to remember. The name of the guy who came up with some of the categorization, it was Roger Geller, I believe.
Uh-huh.
And Roger Geller, he is the bicycle coordinator for the city of Portland, Oregon, who I think I knew that, but I didn't immediately bring it to mind. He puts riders in four categories. 1% or less are the strong and fearless, will ride under any conditions. 7% are the enthused and confident, feeling comfortable sharing the roadway with automotive traffic, but prefer to do so operating on their own facilities. 33% are no way, no how, and the remaining roughly 60% are interested but concerned.
Ah.
So these are all the categories that
we
often talk about.
Chris Smith mentioned these people.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. When he was on.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think I gave you a quote there.
Yes. The goal is to give people the information they need when they set out to ride without getting into the terminology that engineers use when they are designing bike lanes, class one, class two, buffered, separated, cycle track, and so forth, which is essentially meaningless to the layperson. I like that. But which forms the basis of color coding on most urban bike maps.
Yeah, and this is a great idea because, again, you know, like the facilities may be there, but there's a big difference between a bike lane on a 40-mile on ARPA road with a bunch of heavy traffic and a road that's like a really quiet one that also has a bike lane. But,
or Sharrow's on the St. John's Bridge.
Mm-hmm, exactly, which may not necessarily do what it's anything supposed to do. Like, yeah, I mean, the St. John's Bridge, it's a steep incline. It's a narrow roadway. It's also a big freight corridor.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's scary as crap to try to bike over.
Exactly. So anyways, the idea that basically they're trying to reclassify, and instead of taking the map and saying, hey, this is what kinds of facilities are there, instead they're looking at it and saying, hey, this is who, you know, this is the classification of person that might want to ride on this road.
Wow.
And I would say I am actually probably close to the 1% of, you know, fearless and whatnot. I wouldn't say I'm fearless, but I feel pretty damn comfortable on really, really dangerous places. The places that other people probably wouldn't want to ride.
Sure. Sure.
Foster Road, for example.
Yeah. Well, 82nd, like you and Adele and myself.
That's
one,
right.
One night decided, hey, it's late enough.
That was like after
we
midnight.
We got lights.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And it's,
but
that was fun.
I would never do that on my own.
Right. And certainly not during the day when it's full of traffic. Yeah.
No.
So, yeah. Anyways, that's a interesting concept, and I was thinking about it last week when we were talking with Ellie and Martina about just about the way that things work. I think I had read the story before that, but I didn't find a good way to shoehorn it into the conversation. So, yeah, but just talking about, like, you know, people's comfort levels and getting people of all stripes to ride. So.
Right, and that's one of the downfalls, I think, with what is that called? Vehicular cycling?
Vehicular cycling, yeah.
I mean, it's cool to get on the roads and bike like a car. But the understanding I have is I'm still not actually a car. Mm-hmm. You know, I could maybe be protected under some of those laws, but
right.
Cars don't look for bikes
exactly.
as much.
Or people driving cars roads. Don't look for people on bikes,
right.
As Jonathan Moss would say.
There you go. I mean, motorcycles have had that problem since motorcycles have been on roads.
Hence
too.
The bumper sticker, start seeing motorcycles.
Right, yeah. Right. And that's why a lot of I get so irritated by the noise of motorcycles, but that's why a lot of motorcycle advocates would say, like, that muffler noise, or, you know, the reason why those engines are so loud is, like, sometimes those can save your life. Like,
gotcha.
You know, cars will veer into your lane,
right?
Without seeing you because they're not looking for a motorcycle,
right? So if it sounds louder and sounds bigger, then people might start taking notice, knowing it's there.
Exactly. Yeah.
So anyhow. The next one's kind of sad. So.
Next one is, yeah, but necessary. Cycle tourists killed in a Thailand collision.
Yeah,
is from Logan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Logan sent this on to me, and a lot of people were talking about this over the last weekend or two. Mm.
British couple on a round-the-world cycling tour have been killed in a road crash in Thailand. Peter Root and Mary Thompson, both artists, aged 34, from Guernsey in the Channel Islands, set off on a global adventure in July 2011. Wow, so they've been doing this for about 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Cycled through Europe, the Middle East, and China. The couple died on Wednesday when they were run over by a driver of a pickup truck while riding their bicycles on a road 70 miles east of Bangkok. They were in their 23rd country when the tragedy struck. Mr. Root's devastated father, Jerry, today said he heard of the tragedy on Wednesday and described the pair as a golden couple who loved life.
Yeah, and there's the full article is the Mail online. It's a UK publication, and it's got all the details there. They mentioned that these two had a website. It was called Two on Four Wheels. It's twoonfourwheels.com, all spelled out, all one word. It's worth taking a look at. They've got all of their stuff up until their untimely death was stored here. Blog posts and stories about what they've been up to. It's still there as a nice memorial. It's great to know that, you know, they did some really amazing things. And, you know, the route on the map here, the route so far, it ends in Thailand here.
Yeah.
But it's an enormous orange line
that
going
is,
across Europe and Asia all the way down to Thailand.
That is amazing.
Yeah. So we mourn their loss. We mourn the conditions that make it unsafe for people to be on roads and that sort of thing. And, of course, our thoughts and well wishes are with their families. And
yeah.
But
you know, my take on this is, like, it's tragic, but man, what a way to go. Like, doing what you love.
Yeah.
Like, how better a way could you ask for, you know? I mean, the reality is we all go eventually.
Yeah, one time, you know, or another.
34 is really freaking young.
Mm-hmm.
But in the meantime, like, you went out doing what you did. So,
right.
Hey,
right.
Cheers to you two.
Definitely, yeah.
And yeah, like I said, our thoughts are with your family.
Definitely. Well, so, anyways, here's to them.
Right on.
All right. Well, this is probably a good time to wrap up the show.
Sounds right.
A couple shows coming up. Jonathan Moss, I'm going to interview him next week.
Oh, yeah.
He was supposed to actually air today, and his voice was a little bit on the fritz, so we decided to push it off until he feels a little bit better. So his show is going to be coming up next week. Mickey Blizzard, Freeway Slayer, comes in on the 10th. Michael Anderson on the 17th from Portland Afoot, and Allison Wiley from Diamond Cut Life and other places. We'll see how she wants to be identified, but yeah, I'm sure you can Google her on the 24th. So are we prepared to close?
Let's close this
all
up.
All right.
All right.
Until next week, hope you all have fantastic weeks. Hope you have good times on your bike, good times on the bus. And I hope you find at least one way that you might yet be able to simplify your life just a bit more. So, oh, here's our music. Here it comes. So close.
And
oh, there we go.
There we go. Find us on the internet at thesprocketpodcast.com. Send feedback about the program and suggestions for topics and or guests and or drinks. Write us via email. The address is thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. Or call and leave us a message at 503-847-9774. Connect with us on Twitter at Sprocket Podcast. Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for providing our theme music. Find him on the internet at ryanjlane.bandcamp.com. Thanks to Herbird for our headline sounder. Find them at herbirdmusic.com.
I can't wait for more sun and sleeping outdoors on dirt.
Today was great.
Yeah.
Good night, everyone.
Bye.